Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Jaden.
This episode, we're going to be covering some quick comic and TV news, but the bulk of the episode, we're going to be talking about both Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and specifically how it pertains to the new Captain America Civil War movie, what we think you might need to know or want to know before you go in to see that. And we're also going to give you our thoughts on the latest DC animated feature, which is Justice League versus Teen Titans. So Free Comic Book Day is coming up this weekend, and the first Saturday of May, traditionally. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. And probably toward the end of the episode, maybe talk a little bit about conventions we'll be at, maybe some books that we've been reading. Not going to go into detail on that, but just, you know, mention things that we've read recently that we're enjoying. So it's just Jaden and I for now. Manny should be joining us later, so let's get right into the news.
We're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
News came out this week that Josh Williamson has gone exclusive with DC. For those not familiar with his work, probably most known for his creator-owned title at Skybound, Robert Kirkman's imprint over at Image, which was Birthright. Also, he writes the critically acclaimed Nailbiter, that's also over at Image. So we saw Josh at WonderCon, or I did anyway, and Manny as well. He was on the DC Rebirth panel. He's taking over the writing duties on Flash. And as I said, we now know he's exclusive at DC. And not only was that exclusive deal signed, but he's also going to be writing a new series under their Vertigo imprint, which is called Frostbite. Did you happen to see what Frostbite was going to be all about, Jaden?
Yeah, I looked over it a little bit. It looks cool. I like the image.
The image looks cool, and the storyline sounds interesting as well. It focuses on someone who's a quote-unquote coyote, so a human trafficker, basically, someone who's paid money to get a person from point A to point B. And nowadays, in like current world terms, it usually refers to someone who's trying to bring an illegal immigrant specifically from Mexico into the United States. They're called coyotes. So in Josh's story, post-apocalyptic, the world is experiencing another ice age, and now on top of that, there's this new epidemic or disease, which has been dubbed Frostbite, thus the title, which basically causes people to freeze solid, causes all the moisture in their cells to become frozen. And so all we know is that this main character, this coyote, has been hired to transport this scientist and his daughter from point A to point B in hopes of curing this disease. And then, you know, she takes this job and then finds out there's a bounty for some reason or another on the heads of these two people. So I'm sure a lot of drama ensues. So Josh is a good writer and a good guy. So I'm looking forward to checking out Frostbite and looking forward to his take on The Flash as well. Also in some DC news, we're going to have a new old origin for Jason Todd. If you go and look at the link in the show notes, Newsarama had some specific exclusives earlier this week, exclusive previews of some DC Rebirth artwork, specifically from Batman Rebirth. And there was another one, too. I can't think of what it was off the top of my head. Oh, Red Hood and the Outlaws. Yeah, Jason Todd.
Yeah.
So anyway, for those of you not familiar, in the pre-New 52 continuity in DC, Batman met Jason Todd when Jason Todd was attempting to steal the tires off the Batmobile. And then in the New 52, that got changed around a little bit. Well, now I guess they're going back to that old classic way that the two met. So I guess kind of following along with what Geoff Johns has been saying about Rebirth, about how it's kind of embracing the legacy, the old way that a lot of these characters were introduced and things like that. So I kind of like the idea. The pages looked really cool as far as the artwork and at one point. What's interesting in the original one, so, you know, Batman finds that Jason Todd is stealing the tires off the Batmobile, and Jason Todd manages to slug him with like hit him in the midsection with the tire iron and run off. And of course, Batman catches up to him. But I never thought about it much at the time, but I guess when you think about it, I mean, some 12, 13-year-old kid probably is not going to be able to hit Batman with a tire iron. And so in the new preview pages, we see, again, he's trying to hit Batman with a tire iron, but of course, Batman's able to stop it. You know, he grabs a tire iron, but it gets a smirk on his face like this kid's got some spunk. So the pages look great. The art looks awesome. So I'm looking forward to this. I think Jason Todd is one of the characters DC's actually handled pretty well in the new 52. He's definitely grown as a character. He was sort of two-dimensional before, so look forward to them continuing to flesh out him as a character. And I mean, I know he's one of your favorite characters, so how do you feel about this?
I thought it was cool. I think it really fits the character. It makes sense. Like, Jason Todd was more of like he was a delinquent, but he wasn't like, I don't know. I feel like Damian is more, like, has a little bit of evil in him because he was raised by Ra's al Ghul and he's kind of brutal. But I feel like Jason Todd was more of like, he just kind of did it out of necessity, you know?
Yeah, kind of a victim of circumstance. Like, grew up
kind of on the street and stuff. And I think that this really is, I think it should be. I didn't realize that this wasn't his origin in the New 52. I didn't realize that I don't even really know what his origin was, actually, in the New 52. Yeah,
they changed it, but yeah, I'm not, I know that they had taken that out, but I'm not 100%. Let me think for a second. Oh, that's right. I remember what it was. So, Batman caught him trying to steal, drugs. I don't know if it was because he was sick or because he was selling the drugs or whatever, but he was breaking into Dr. Leslie Tompkins' clinic or something like that.
Yeah.
And stealing drugs. And Batman caught him doing that. So, there's something to that stealing the tires off the Batmobile. You know, I mean, clearly he knows it's Batman's car. You know, anybody who sees the Batmobile knows that's Batman's car. So, you know, it kind of adds something to the character that, you know, he's got a lot of guts. Whereas if you're just breaking into some random, you know, clinic to steal drugs, that doesn't really say anything, you know, about his character above and beyond that he's desperate or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like that they're going back to the old origin. All right. Also, one final a little bit of DC news. Frank Cho, who was under exclusive contract with Marvel for the last few years, that contract is now up, and he's going to be doing the covers for the new Wonder Woman book. So he's shown a few preliminary sketches. He said that he wasn't really allowed to show much, you know, any finished sketches or anything like that. But his art, some people really love it. Some people can't stand it. For me, I'm kind of in the middle. I feel like it's very clean. It has good lines. But there are times when I don't care as much for the compositions or the layouts he uses. I mean, mainly he's a cover artist. He doesn't really do interiors much, although he was recently working on a totally awesome Hulk with Greg Pak. But yeah, his stuff doesn't really flow for me that much. But it'll be interesting to see. I think he's a good fit for Wonder Woman. Obviously, he's known for drawing women scantily clad, showing off their assets, so to speak. Power Girl, Wonder Woman, Spider Woman, things like that. So, but I think it'll be a good fit. And I have a feeling that even though he's not doing the interiors, the work that Liam Sharp and Nicola Scott are going to do on the interiors of that book, you know, we've already seen examples of both their work, and it looks just amazing. I have a feeling that's going to cause Frank to kind of up his game, and maybe if he can incorporate a little bit of their styles, because I feel like both their styles have much more of a fluidity to them. And like I said, I think that's maybe a little bit where Frank Cho's work lacks. His stuff seems it's very solid and very good, but yeah, maybe it's just because the lines he uses tend to be so thick. That it just feels like almost stamped on the page, I'll say. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
They look pretty cool.
I
don't mind Frank Cho at all. I think he, like you said, he has really clean lines, but I could definitely see how he wouldn't be, there wouldn't be much story to, like, he doesn't have as much flow, because it's like you said, every picture I've seen him, or every sketch or piece of art that I've seen him do, it's pretty much just like, they're in that one position, and that's like,
yeah. I mean, he's like a moving. It's like a pinup artist, like yeah. you know, like great at doing like prints, let's say.
Yeah.
So I guess yeah, like I said, I guess we'll wait and see. A little bit of Marvel news. Marvel had been teasing with this picture of a yellow star. It looked kind of reminiscent of maybe the star from the chest of Captain Marvel, or maybe Quasar, perhaps even Nova, a little bit. And anyway, they were teasing it in this image of this star on a black, this yellow star on a black background, in conjunction with Avengers Standoff, and saying kind of who will it be, kind of thing. So didn't know if it was a returning character. I didn't know if it was going to be a new character. And a lot of speculation. I mean, Captain Marvel is maybe the one character that they've never brought back, along with Gwen Stacy, although, you know, she's back as Spider-Gwen now, albeit Gwen Stacy from a different universe. So there is that. But it's finally been revealed. You can go check out the article on Bleeding Cool for more details. But all I'm going to say, I'm not going to say who it is, but I'm going to say that it is going to be a new Quasar. Not Wendell Vaughn, who was formerly the Quasar and had a long-running series. So it is a character that's already been introduced in the Marvel Universe that's going to become Quasar. So if you want it spoiled for you or you want to know before you read Avengers Standoff, just go to the show notes, click the link in the article, and you can find out for yourself. And finally, in some comic news, Generation Zero, who for fans of Valiant comics know from their Harbinger Wars miniseries from a few years ago and from the pages of Bloodshot and Harbinger. Now, Valiant had trademarked that title, that name, Generation Zero, a while ago, and Bleeding Cool mentioned it. You know, it's a step that publishers take before they usually are going to launch a title, because obviously they don't want copycats. They want to be able to control the name of these teams and these properties. That way, you know, they can make sure that it's not someone's not piggybacking off of them or trying to make money off of them, or, you know, they just want to protect their intellectual properties. You know, it's totally understandable. So, like I said, a few years ago, Valiant registered this copyright, this trademark for the name Generation Zero, and then nothing came of it. Well, Dinesh Shamdasani, the chief creative officer of Valiant, recently retweeted the link to that article. And so the speculation now, of course, is that we're finally going to be getting a Generation Zero comic. So I really like Generation Zero kids. Just to give a quick background, these were the kids that when Bloodshot was working for an organization called PRS, Project Rising Spirit, as kind of a mindless automaton, they would send him out on these missions to recruit other Psyots, which is the Valiant Universe's version of mutants. So they would detect a new Psyot manifesting his abilities or her abilities. They'd send Bloodshot out to kidnap this child. Most of the time it was a young child or adolescent. They'd send Bloodshot out, kidnap the child, bring it back to Project Rising Spirit, figure out how they could weaponize said child, figure out how they could use it for their own shadowy purposes, and then they'd mind wipe Bloodshot, and then, you know, send him to retrieve the next one. So once Bloodshot kind of broke free and realized what was happening, he took it upon himself to go and free all these Psyots that he had previously captured for Project Rising Spirit, and a bunch of them kind of banded together. You know, they already worked together as a team somewhat because they were friends. They were all, you know, trapped together, imprisoned together, so they've kind of formed their own family, so to speak. And so the Generation Zero concept is the ones that banded together and managed to escape with the help of Bloodshot and the things that transpired in Harbinger Wars. And they're kind of off on their own now. So we haven't seen too much of them in the Valiant Universe lately, but it would be pretty cool to see what's going on in the lives of Generation Zero, particularly if Joshua Dysart's going to be writing it, because we know Imperium's coming to an end. And when I talked to Josh, he talked about, you know, he's ready to turn the page and go to the next chapter of that story, that corner of the Valiant Universe. You know, the first chapter being his epic run, 1-25 of Harbinger, and lately he's been focusing on Harada and what Harada's been trying to achieve in the pages of Imperium. And, but as I said, it's coming to an end, so it's time to take the next step There was a lot of speculation maybe he'd go back to the Harbinger kids, the Renegades as they called themselves, but perhaps it's going to be talking about what's going on with the Generation Zero kids, which is really exciting because these are characters that are original to the new version of Valiant, not the old classic 90s Valiant.
Now I can ask you face to face, who was there that day? Who killed my family? I gotta pay every single goddamn one of them.
So in some TV news, it's our one bit of TV news, and perhaps this is news that's not really news, the Punisher is set to get his own Netflix series.
So, oh, thank God.
You didn't hear about this?
No, I heard about it, but I was so happy to hear about it. I had a feeling it was coming because everybody's asking for it so much, but I'm really just happy that it got greenlit this fast.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the thing, right? Like, season two dropped, and within a couple days, that was all the speculation. Oh, the Punisher's going to get his own series. Punisher's going to get his own. Even actually, might even the speculation might have even started before the series debuted.
Yeah, I think so, because people were talking about who'd seen like previews and stuff, that he was the best part of the show, or maybe not previews. The people who on the set that might have said that he was the best part of the show, or that he was great, because he is. He's amazing in that series. He needed his own series really badly.
Yeah, and the rumors were so substantial. They were just everywhere that some of the producers came out and said, right? Didn't one of the big wigs at Marvel, Netflix, whatever, come out and say, no, there's not, you know, we haven't said there's going to be a Punisher? Because I remember them saying something like trying to quash the rumor, saying no.
Well, there wasn't. I mean, I definitely believe that there wasn't any plans for Punisher series until after they'd already started filming. I think I heard that they had started filming and that he was so good that they were actually thinking that he was going to be a great part of the show, and then people started speculating that he would be have his own series, but I don't think that they probably had that until they released it and got such a big, like, everybody said exactly that he should have his own series.
Yeah, but I mean the rumors were so widespread that people started taking it as like a concrete thing, to the point where I think Marvel came out and said, no, we don't currently have any plans for a Punisher series. I think I remember them saying, like, somebody specifically saying, no, we don't, there are no current plans, you know, and I specifically remember them saying no current, they use that word current, like, we currently have no plans for a Punisher series. And it's like you said, they probably wanted to make sure that the numbers were going to be good on the second, you know, good enough on the second Daredevil series, because you never know when something could, you know, bomb, even if it gets critical acclaim or what have you.
But Netflix kind of has a little bit of a advantage in that, though, that they can release stuff that's not as popular and still kind of bite the bullet, because it is Netflix and a lot of people do end up watching their stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I do think that, like, they probably were like, let's let this season of Daredevil be out for a little while. Let's not take away any of the hype away from the season. Let's wait till it dies down, and then we'll see after all the dust has settled how it looks at the other end. And at the other end, I think people are still saying the Punisher needs to get his own series.
Yeah, it could be true. And you know what? And they even could have known back then when they said, you know, we currently have no plans. It could have been they were still talking about it. It wasn't finalized. Maybe they hadn't signed John Bernthal yet. You know, like, what if they say, okay, yeah, like, critical acclaim, sounds great, want to do a Punisher series, but if you can't get John Bernthal to reprise the role, you're kind of dead in the water. I mean, I don't think it would, like, if they said, yeah, we're gonna do a Punisher series, but John Bernthal doesn't want to do it, we have to find another actor and cast a different actor. I think
no, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I think, by the way, a lot of people
saying he wanted to do the solo series before they announced it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They probably wanted to make sure he was under contract, you know, iron out all those details. Sometimes that takes a while. So, I'm sure that, you know, that could have had something to do with it, too. So, anyway, it should be a lot of people excited. I still haven't watched any of the Netflix Marvel stuff. So, I mean, I literally saw just a tiny bit of him as the Punisher when I was making the little bumper that you just heard. Which I, there was a little, it was called a badass scene that I found on YouTube that I pulled the audio from. So that's all I've seen. But, yeah, it seemed like he did a pretty good job. Him and Matt seem to be getting along. So I guess they are at first, and then when Punisher crosses the line that Daredevil won't cross, that being killing people, that's probably where things start to go south, huh?
Well, that's kind of where it starts, actually.
Yeah. Fair enough.
You just started a war!
All right, movie news. So this was, I think, Thursday or Friday this news came out, that Fox has officially pulled out of San Diego Comic-Con. Did you hear about this, Jaden?
I did not hear about this.
So, you know, in recent years, and we talked about it last year when we did our prepping for San Diego episode, and, you know, we talked about it even in the San Diego episodes, how it felt a little less crowded, felt like there was less movie stuff, because, let's see, who wasn't there? It's like, Paramount wasn't there last year, right? And
that sounds right.
I think somebody else, Marvel wasn't there last year. And, you know, the speculation was, of course, that, oh, well, they had their D23, so they're saving, you know, their stuff for that or whatever. So, you know, it's become, and we've talked about this, there's a lot of reasons for this. But what's interesting is the reason Fox gave. Fox said the reason that they are not going to do a Hall H presentation at San Diego Comic-Con this year is because of the leaks. You know, you have 3,000-5,000 people, whatever it is, in Hall H. Everyone has a smartphone. You know, the signs are everywhere. They're flashed up on the screen. They're hanging on the walls. Do not record. Do not take pictures. This is all exclusive content just for the attendees of San Diego Comic-Con. But it's 5,000 people. Everybody has a smartphone. There's no way to stop it from leaking. There's no way. And honestly, at this point, I don't even think the movie studio should stop it. I mean, they were mad that the Deadpool footage got leaked because, you know, they said it wasn't ready. It wasn't, you know, because it was raw footage. I never watched it, but didn't you? You saw it, right? The footage that from San Diego?
I don't think I saw the Deadpool footage. I think I saw the Suicide Squad trailer. Yeah. Wasn't that leaked last year, too? Yeah,
that was leaked as well.
I watched that.
It's like, you know, there's no way to control it. I mean, look what Warner Brothers did with the trailer for Batman versus Superman. It was actually released online that morning before the panel even started. So that's one way to go, or release it the next day, or release it the Monday. You know, clearly it didn't hurt Deadpool, you know, even though it was raw footage that... So I imagine when they say raw footage, like, so it wasn't doctored up with CGI, so probably things, for example, like his eyes... You know, that was all done CGI post-production. So, that you know, things like that. So, Deadpool's like the highest grossing rated R movie of all time. So, clearly it didn't hurt. So, there's people speculating, oh, you know, it's just they don't have anything good to show. Or, you know, it's another reason. Maybe they don't want to spend the money and they just want to blame it on the fan. Like, it doesn't really make sense. I mean, maybe... They can point to that and say, okay, you know, it's the illegal release of the material and we spend all this money on marketing, whatever. They can point to that and you can't say, oh, that doesn't happen. That's a dumb reason, you know. You can say that's a dumb reason, but you can't say that doesn't happen and it's a dumb reason. You know what I'm saying? Like, because it does happen. Yeah. Maybe from their perspective, it sounds better than, oh, we just don't want to give a reason or we just don't want to do it. So, I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of articles written about it over the weekend. People saying, you know, the idiots ruining Comic-Con, causing these movie studios to run out, to pull out because they, you know, can't stop from spoiling things and releasing the footage. And it's like people saying, well, no, it's the movie studios that ruined it in the first place and made it big. And maybe it'll go back to being what it was before. Well, I don't think it's ever going to go back to what it was where you could walk up on a Saturday and buy a ticket. You know, it's just never going to... All the movie studios could leave. It's not... I mean, it's too late. Comics are too mainstream now. These heroes are in the movies. They're on TV. They're too much in the mainstream. So it's never going to go back to, you know, not selling out and being able to go buy a badge on... You know, walk up and buy a badge and go in. It's just not. Whether it's less crowded, you know, that's a possibility. Whether Hall H becomes easier to... get into, again, that's a possibility. You know, they also have the what is it, the HQ, CCHQ, Comic-Con HQ channel that's starting up, where they plan on showing some of the presentations, some panels on there. And in fact, in regards to this story being released on Thursday or Friday of last week, Comic-Con issued a statement saying, you know, that, you know, they always try to do the best they can to stop people from recording, but with the technology that there is today and how ubiquitous it is, that there's just no way they can guarantee that that footage is not going to be released. You know, it's not going to be leaked. But they're working with the studios to maybe release some of it on the Comic-Con HQ channel. So, I don't know. There's speculation that Marvel's going to be there this year, but maybe not next year, because next year, as we talked about on the show previously, the D23, the Disney convention, is going to be the week after San Diego. So, you know, they're going to say anything that they were going to show for Marvel or Star Wars or whatever, they're going to save for their own show. I mean, why would you show it at San Diego and then show the same thing a week later? You're just stealing the hype from your own convention. So it's San Diego's definitely experiencing some changes. So I guess we'll see. I mean, you and I don't really, we're not willing to give up the time to stand in line for a Hall H panel.
I think that that's like, I don't know. You're not really getting that much. If you are getting something, it's like, do you really need to see Deadpool? Like 5 minutes of Deadpool footage is not even done. Like a year before the movie comes out, you're just going to get really hyped for a movie that's not going to be out for another year, and then you're going to lose your hype for that movie. I don't know. I don't feel like the reward is really worth the wait for a lot of the people.
Yeah, but let's talk about last year. You found out that the day after the panel for the CW TV panel that you could have just walked right in.
Yeah. I don't really care that much, honestly. Like, I went and did other stuff. I had other things I did instead. Like,
yeah, we were at the Valiant panel.
Oh, yeah.
But you were talking about maybe going over there to check it out. And then decided not to.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that big of a deal. I didn't really miss that much. I missed like the trailers that I saw probably 2 weeks later.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. It's not. I mean, if we're hanging out with creators or friends or getting sketches or books signed or, you know, things like that, I mean, those are more. I mean, that's our one chance to do that.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. Whereas, like, yeah, like you said, yeah, you get to see the trailer before everybody else, but you get to see it eventually anyway. So,
yeah.
I mean, I guess we're just not the kind of, I mean, some people, that's it. That's all they go just because they want to see the, you know, Walking Dead stuff before anybody else. And really this, you know, we've said this before as well. This all started with Twilight. When Twilight held their Hall H presentation, that's when that was like the peak. That's when it really was like, you know, people camping out for several days because they, you know, just had to get in there and see the Twilight stuff before anybody else. So you take that for what it's worth. All right. Well, now to the meat of the episode here. Captain America Winter Soldier. You've been fond of saying for quite a while you think it's the best Marvel movie, right?
I think so. Like, movie wise like, on its own, I think that story wise and character wise and acting wise it's probably the best one. I think I probably enjoyed the first Avengers more. I enjoyed it more, but I think that this is a better movie.
Yeah, now I haven't seen all the Marvel movies, so I don't know that I can say it's the best one. You know, you've been telling me for so long that it's the best one, and I've heard a lot of other people say it's the best Marvel movie. You know, again, not necessarily saying they enjoyed it the most or it's their favorite, although some of them say that as well, but just saying, yeah, like, as far as well-acted, interaction of characters, you know, the way the characters relate to each other, plot, pacing, story-wise, like, from top to bottom, visually, like, overall, it's the best movie, you know, the best made movie of all the Marvel movies. And like I said, I haven't seen them all, so I can't necessarily say that. And again, because I had so many people hyping it up, that it really couldn't live up to the hype. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, when you have everybody telling you, oh, this movie's so great, this movie's so great, this movie's so great, it's hard for a movie to live up to that, right?
Yeah.
That being said, after I watched it, I mean, because as I said, you know, if it comes down to spending time reading comics or watching a comic book movie, I'll choose the comics over the movies every time, whether it's a DC movie, Marvel movie, doesn't matter. I just would prefer to read the comics. And so for that reason, I haven't made time to see all the Marvel movies. Watching this movie, even though it didn't necessarily live up to the hype, it did make me say to myself, I really need to make time to go back and watch Avengers, watch Iron Man 3, watch Thor Dark World, watch Avengers Age of Ultron. Like, I need to watch all the Marvel movies. Like, I really need to. You know, as much as I want the DC movies to be good, because I love the DC characters so much, I probably have more love for Superman and Batman and those DC characters than I do for Captain America and Iron Man. So it pains me to say that the Marvel movies, they're just better. They're just, you know, like Captain America Winter Soldier is a better movie than Batman versus Superman. Hands down, there's no argument. Did I agree with all the story choices that were made? Did I agree with all the plot? And there, no. Not, you know, not really. But I can't argue that it's not a well-made movie. You know, I can't argue that that the interaction between, like, I don't particularly care for, what's his name, Mackie?
Yeah, Anthony Mackie is Falcon. Yeah, I don't really, he's definitely a give or take character for me. I don't really care about Falcon that much. I think it's just, it's not so much Anthony Mackie. I just think it's more just the character.
No, see, I kind of liked the character. I certainly liked the scenes with him flying around, and I thought the wings looked cool and everything. I think if it had been an actor that I liked more, I would have enjoyed it. I would have enjoyed him as a character more. Not that I think he's a bad actor, he did a bad job, but there's just something about him that I didn't, that I, it made me be, I felt a little more indifferent.
Yeah.
You know? So, but I can't, you know, I can't really say who I would have liked. You know, there's nobody that springs to mind that I would have cast in that role more, you know, that I thought would have done a better job or anything. I can't really think of anybody. The whole Hydra infiltrating S.H.I.E.L.D. and S.H.I.E.L.D. basically being torn apart, that was an interesting choice. Didn't know that I necessarily agreed with that. Because we still, I mean, and I don't know how it all works either, because, you know, I know there's still a S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show, so clearly there's still S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
but
well,
there's
I can kind of sum that up a little bit. If you guys haven't watched that, it's probably spoiler alert. But in S.H.I.E.L.D., they had the group that Coulson leads, which is the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, basically. And once S.H.I.E.L.D. like basically goes under, this makes them all go under. Pretty much, it pretty much gets rid of S.H.I.E.L.D. except for like this one team or this little bit left that then Coulson is now leading instead of. Nick Fury.
Yeah, because Nick Fury's in Age of Ultron, right?
Yeah, but very not little.
As S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah, so I mean that.
No, there's no S.H.I.E.L.D. in Age of Ultron, really.
Yeah, so, I mean that kind of. I mean, I understand why they did it, you know, story wise, but it just. I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. is too integral to the Marvel Universe to ever disappear.
Well, I think it'll be back. I think that in the show right now, they are pretty much just Coulson's working it back into like making it in a better place, basically, instead of like pretty much protecting the human race from stuff or protecting S.H.I.E.L.D. or U.S. from stuff. It's just kind of a do good like thing, like save the world. That's about it.
Yeah. So, but anyway, that part just kind of bothered me.
Yeah.
And then. I mean, Winter Soldier was cool.
I don't like the actor really that much.
I thought he was okay. You know, I liked him better than Anthony Mackie. But I just felt like there were... And the metal arm was super cool, too.
Yeah.
But I just felt like it was kind of a wasted opportunity. And I'm sure that, you know, more of the character is going to... You know, obviously we know he's kind of integral to the plot of Captain America Civil War. But I just thought that... Like, if I had just seen Captain America Winter Soldier... And never saw the first Captain America or didn't like it or whatever. I wasn't a fan of the comics. I don't think there was enough development of that, of Captain America or Steve Rogers realizing that it was his old friend.
Yeah.
He realizes it like way late in the movie, and then they have the big fight, and then that's it. Then he saves them, you know. He saves them, leaves them on the shore, and he walks off. There's no... I just felt like it was a wasted opportunity. There was no hook. You know what I'm saying? So if you're not really a fan of superhero movies, Marvel movies, you could like take them or leave them. There wasn't really anything in here that would be like, when you realize, oh, they're going to explore the Winter Soldier Captain America thing more in the next Captain America movie. Eh, that's okay. I'm good. You know, I just thought there should have been something there should have been something a little more to that. A little more, I don't know, like necessarily a cliffhanger or just something. You know, instead he rescues him, the Winter Soldier rescues Captain America, he leaves him on the shore and he walks off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I could see that. They focused a lot on Caps and Black Widow's relationship in this movie, trying to make them like really good friends.
Yeah, that's true.
And like, I don't think they really had that much time, because you don't really, I don't think you know until at least halfway through the movie that Winter Soldier is Bucky Barnes.
Yeah, that might be true. I mean, as soon as I heard
it, like, you knew.
No, right. So yeah, maybe that's a part of it as well.
It was kind of a shocker when I first found it out, because I didn't see this in the theaters, but I didn't really hear much about it. I don't know why, but I saw it and I was like, oh, wow, it's Bucky.
Oh, you didn't know from the comics that Winter Soldier was?
No.
Ah. Yeah, I mean, it was such a famous story that, yeah, I mean, I already knew. You know, once you have the character in the movie and you call him Winter Soldier, then it's known. And it was a big thing, though, so I can understand your shock in the movie when you found out that, because... Like, Bucky was one of those characters that stayed, you know, because, you know, nowadays characters die and come back all the time, like every other week, you know, but Bucky, he was like Captain Marvel is now. He was one of those, you know, seemingly sacred characters that was killed off and never brought back, not for the longest time, you know, and then they introduced this, and it was when Ed Brubaker was writing Captain America, and they introduced this, you know, Russian assassin, Winter Soldier. And he was, you know, totally brutal and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And the storyline went along. You had no idea who he was. And then you found out it was Bucky. And it was like, oh my gosh, it's Bucky. You know, and it was just impactful and emotional. And yeah, so, yeah, you're probably right. It's probably why they held it back until, you know, the later part of the movie. Just so they could try to have that. But yeah, I think it would have only taken, and I'm not exactly sure what I would have wanted them to do, but just... something, you know, just some kind of, even if you took the last mind wipe they did, where he, you know, he was like, I know this guy, you know, and he was almost remembering, even if he just would have could have like fully remembered and maybe remembered something from that same scene that Steve Rogers was thinking about when they said that they'll, you know, always be, he'll always have his back or whatever. Even if Bucky could have remembered that same scene, maybe from a different perspective, and then they didn't mind wipe again, just something like that. Instead of just, you know, mind wiping him, and then they have the big battle, and then he saves Cap, leaves him on the shore and walks off. I felt like, okay, well, why should I care?
Yeah. Well, I think that's... Well, they make the movies 2 hours or as close to 2 hours as they can with Marvel and Disney, just because it's the standard. So I feel like they do skip out on some character development. Well, they do skip out on character development. You can see that really blatantly in Age of Ultron. That's one of the reasons why it didn't do as good as the first Avengers. But I don't think... I think that we will get more between Bucky and Steve in this... I mean, in Cap in this next movie. Because it will be more when they're friends. But yeah, I do wish I could have seen a little bit more of them, like... Instead of just being at the very end of the movie, him saving him, but like maybe have another 5-minute scene after where he's like they're talking or something.
Yeah, well, I just feel like it would have, like I personally am not that excited. I was more excited to go see Batman versus Superman, even though it turned out to not be as good as I'd hoped. I was more excited to go see that than Captain America: Civil War, even though I know that technically. All those things we talked about visually and pacing wise and script and acting, whatever, that Captain America Civil War is going to be probably be a better movie just based on Marvel's track record.
Yeah, I think that's just love for characters.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. There was, if there had been something more in Winter Soldier, Captain America Winter Soldier, that where I was like, man, I can't wait for the next movie because I want to find out, you know, if they just left some kind of hook. And that's where I, because I kind of, you know, I know the Civil War story already, you know, and granted, they're going to be changing that a little bit. We'll talk about that in a little while. But I just feel like, you know, that's what, for me, that's what Winter Soldier was missing. Yeah, that and just the callous way they destroyed S.H.I.E.L.D. were just the only two things that I would, the two knocks that I have on the movie. Other than, you know, there's always little things that you go, well, that's convenient, or, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but I mean, it is a superhero movie. Yeah.
Like when they go back to, when Black Widow and Captain America go back to the army base in New Jersey that he trained at, like way before he ever got his powers. And I should say that when I went to watch Captain America Winter Soldier, it had been so long. Like, I only ever saw Captain America, the first Avenger, once in the theaters when it was first released. I had never watched it again after that. So before I watched Winter Soldier, I was like, okay, well, let me go back and watch Captain America, the first Avenger, just to kind of like refresh. And so I started it, and it was kind of late. It was probably like after 10, maybe almost 11 o'clock at night. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to watch both of them. I'll just watch this one, and then maybe the next day or something, I'll watch Winter Soldier. And so I watched First Avenger, and it ended, and I was like, well, let me just start the Winter Soldier. I won't watch it all. It's getting late, but let me just start it. See the first couple minutes, and man, I got sucked in, and I ended up watching the whole thing. I was up till after 3, and I had to get up and go to work the next day. I was so tired. So it was. So the. I mean, I was glad that I watched them back to back like that, though, because I feel like I got more out of Winter Soldier. Because if I hadn't watched it again, if I hadn't watched the first Captain America movie again, I wouldn't have remembered so much of him being at that particular location and training and all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, so they, you know, the weapons bunker, and they go, and they're like going down underground, like way underground, you know, like they, and he, cause he, and he even comments, if you're in a hidden underground bunker, why would you need another elevator to go down even farther? And then you see the scene of them going, you know, way down, way down, way down. And then they find the, you know, what they find down there with Arnim Zola and all that stuff. And then the S.H.I.E.L.D. finds out where they are, and they send the missiles. And so, I mean, it's S.H.I.E.L.D., so I'll buy that these are these incredibly bunker-busting missiles that can destroy a bunker and make all kinds of rubble collapse on top of Captain America and Black Widow, even though they're clearly very far underground, right?
Yeah.
You would think it's all this earth and whatever. It would be, they'd be buried alive, but okay, they're not. But then when the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents come and they're digging through the rubble, they're like digging through the rubble and the hole's right there and the sky's like right above them. Like they were only like in a basement, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what? That made no sense whatsoever. So yeah, I mean, again, it's nitpicky stuff, but it's little things like that that, you know, as a lifelong comic fan, it just pulls me out of the story a little bit. And I was like, well... Because when he first finds that, and he tells Black Widow, hey, you know, jump in here, I thought maybe it was like a, not a sewer necessarily, but like a, some kind of a tunnel vent thing that they were going to, you know, be able to run through and escape, not just a hole that he was going to put his shield over and that was it, you know? So, yeah, little things like that. But, yeah, it was an enjoyable movie. I thought very, you know, very well acted. It was pretty darn good. And I think even more so than the visuals, I thought the stunt work was done really well. You know, because it's one thing to have the big explosions and the fight scenes where the Falcon's flying around and the helicarriers or whatever. I don't know. You know, you can kind of tell it's CGI. I don't enjoy that so much as just like the actual like fight scenes. Like when Cap was chasing the Winter Soldier, that might have been one of my favorite scenes. Like after he shot Nick Fury. When Cap was like running through the building and he was like using his shield and he was like breaking through walls and stuff.
Yeah,
that was really cool. I like that. I like that.
Fun fact is, you know that the guy who does the stunts for Daredevil is the same guy who does the stunts for Captain America?
I did not know that. Do you know his name?
His name is Chris Brewster.
Oh. Well, he's pretty good stuntman.
Yeah, he does a bunch of different stuff. He knows all a bunch of, a bunch of different martial arts and stuff, so he can do flips and all that different type of things. But it's cool because he can do a bunch of different types of stunts. Like, Captain America's stunts are very different than Daredevil's stunts.
Yeah, I would imagine so. All right, well, do you have any specific items you feel people need to know? Maybe if they haven't seen Winter Soldier since it came out in the theaters, or never seen Winter Soldier at all, but they plan on going to see Captain America Civil War. Anything you can think of that you want to... I mean, obviously, we've let people know that Winter Soldier is Captain America's childhood friend.
Yeah. I was looking at this, and I watched the movie, like, a couple days ago, and I couldn't really think of anything super specific. It's more of just, like... I would recommend watching the movie if you haven't seen it in a while, because it's, like, there's a lot of character development and stuff, and I feel like there's going to be a lot of the... like Cap and Black Widow, different banter and that type of stuff in Civil War. But I think that, I mean, like you said, Bucky Barnes is Winter Soldier. The Winter Soldier is going to be a huge thing in Civil War. But I feel like it's not just Civil War. Not just Winter Soldier. Like, I feel like Avengers is going to play into it also, and Age of Ultron. But, like, one of the things I like about Marvel movies, and one of the things that I think can also be criticized about Marvel movies, is something you touched on, is that it doesn't really have a hook. There's nothing really keeping you coming back for the next movie, except for the fact that the movie was a good movie. So I feel like they don't do that a ton. There's not really cliffhangers. They don't really do cliffhangers that much in these. Like, the closest thing I think they have to cliffhangers are probably the stingers at the end of the credits.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting because, okay, Disney owns both Marvel and Star Wars, and clearly The Force Awakens had a huge hook at the end, you know? So, they've shown that they're willing to do things like that, you know? Because, you know, one of the arguments against putting, these kind of cliffhanger kind of things is, oh, then, the audience doesn't want to wait, doesn't promote goodwill because... You know, it's one thing to do it on a TV show when you know it's coming back the next season. You know, like if you have a cliffhanger, like The Walking Dead, you know, happened last month or March or whatever. Well, you know the next season of Walking Dead's coming out in September or October or whatever. So it's, you know, it's not even a full year that you have to wait. Whereas with a movie, like, okay, so we had the kind of the cliffhanger ending with Luke Skywalker at the end of The Force Awakens in 2015. And the next Star Wars movie is not coming out until... December 2017. So that's 2 years, you know? And so some people say, oh, well, you know, people don't want to wait that long and blah, blah, blah. And so, I mean, I don't know what other argument you could give other than, you know, you're not, you know, you're trusting that the fans are still going to come back. I mean, with something like Star Wars, I think you're at the point that you can pretty much guarantee that people are going to come back because it's Star Wars. And Marvel movies are getting to be the same way. So I feel like, you know, they should be able to do that. But just to go, like, a few things come to mind when I think, what do you need to know going into Civil War? We talked about Winter Soldier being Captain America's childhood friends, Bucky Barnes. Now, Bucky had joined the army first. Steve Rogers wasn't able to. He was too frail. Then he went through the super soldier program, ended up meeting back up with Bucky over in Europe during World War II. And he joined the squad that Captain America put together to try to stop the Red Skull. The way he became the Winter Soldier was he was killed saving Captain America's life while they were attempting to stop a Hydra train. And to Captain America's knowledge, fell to his death. So apparently what happened was that he survived the fall, basically landed in, you know, huge amounts of snow. And also previously, when he had been captured by Red Skull and Hydra, Arnim Zola had experimented on Bucky. And we see that in the Captain America the First Avenger, that Bucky is not where the other prisoners are. He's in this lab where Captain America finds him. So clearly they knew even way back then that they were planning on doing something special with the character if they got to continue to make these movies. So due to the fact that Arnim Zola had experimented on him, due to the fact that he didn't, you know, fall and land on rocks and have his body busted to bits, he was able to survive the fall. Zola found him, took him, mind-wiped him, brainwashed him. He did lose an arm in the fall, so they gave him a mechanical arm, and they turned him into this, like, killing machine, basically. And so that's where that's basically the origin of the Winter Soldier. So being that there was childhood friends, being that Steve Rogers grew up very frail, getting beat up all the time, and Bucky was kind of his protector, you can clearly understand the strong bond. And not to mention the fact that they did a really good job in Winter Soldier, especially in the beginning of the movie, kind of touching on how Steve Rogers is a man out of time. You know, like, that's the way Marvel explained it back in the 60s when they brought Captain America back, how he could still be a vital, healthy, strong superhero. You know, he'd been a hero in World War II. Toward the end of the war, he was stopping a plane that the Red Skull was launching. The plane blew up, and he landed in these icy waters and froze, and due to the super soldier serum in his veins, was able to survive the suspended animation. And then 20 years later, Stan Lee, you know, creates the Fantastic Four, creates X-Men, creates the Avengers, creates Spider-Man, and they decided to bring Captain America back. And that's the way they did it. Okay, he'd been in suspended animation. That's why he's still the same age, still the same person, and what have you. So that's like 20 years. He was in suspended animation for about 20 years. It was, you know, the mid-40s when the war was winding to a close. And then it was, you know, the early to mid-60s when the Marvel Age started and they brought back Captain America. So 20 years. Not, you know, not an insignificant amount of time, but, you know, not a huge jump either. But that's what's interesting about time has gone on now. And, you know, we see at the end of Captain America the First Avenger that he wakes up in the modern world. And there's that line by Nick Fury at the end of the movie. He says, you know, Captain America asks him, how long was I asleep? He says, 70 years. 70 years is a hell of a lot longer than 20.
Yeah, no doubt.
It makes a much bigger difference. You know, the difference between the world of the 40s and the 60s versus the world of the 40s and today, I mean, night and day, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So I feel like they handled that well. But I also feel like that's part of the reason that when Steve Rogers realizes it's Bucky, why it impacts him so much. Not only is this his childhood friend, not only is this the guy who protected him, who, you know, they said they'd always have each other's backs. Here's a piece of his past, someone he can relate to, someone, you know, because everybody else he knows is pretty much gone at this point, you know? They can't, and even the people that he knows, you know, they've lived their life and they're not the same people they were, you know, when he left them behind, so to speak. Whereas you know, here's a guy who was his best friend who's kind of been through the same thing with him, with being, you know, in suspended animation, being asleep for a long time. And so it's a connection to his past in a way that nobody else could be. So it'll be interesting if we see that play out at all in Civil War. Other things to think about. So in comics, the Civil War event from Marvel, it started in a different way. From the previews that we've seen, it seems like they show some footage of the fallout from things like the battle with the helicarriers in Winter Soldier. We see events from things that have happened in the Avengers movies. And we see William Hurt as Thunderbolt Ross, General Thunderbolt Ross, saying, hey, there's got to be some kind of accountability. Captain America's on the side of, yeah, there's got to be some kind of oversight. You know, these beings are appearing with more and more frequency around the world, these superpowered beings. And they have incredible powers and can wreak incredible amounts of destruction. And Captain America doesn't agree, maybe because a lot of the damage that has happened seems to be Tony Stark's fault in the first place. There's an internet meme I've seen going around over the last week about how without Tony, a lot of the things wouldn't, like, because he's the one that caused Ultron, right?
Yep.
So, you know, they points to a lot of these things. One, it seems like, Tony, you're the one that needs an oversight, not everybody. But anyway, in the comic, it takes a little bit of a different take, I guess you'd say. There are the group of heroes, the young heroes called the New Warriors, and in kind of a art imitates life kind of thing, they are filming their own reality TV show. And it's basically like Cops, but with superheroes. And they find this group, they know where this group of supervillains is hiding out, including one of them who is Nitro, who can basically explode his body as a nuclear explosion. And once they realize they're going to be captured, that's exactly what Nitro does. And to such an extent, the explosion is to such an extent that it obliterates an elementary school that's next to the house that they were hiding out in. And this goes out on, like, live television. And that's what sparks it. What sparks the outcry, the public outcry for this Superhero Registration Act, where they want all the heroes to tell the federal government, the U.S. government, what their secret identity is, register, be trained, and no one's allowed to operate as a superhero without fulfilling all these requirements, you know, and they expect Captain America to go along with it. You know, he's kind of seen as, in a way, an extension of the U.S. government, which I don't think is necessarily fair. Well, you know, I'll talk about a few of those things in a minute, but it causes a schism. You know, Iron Man's on the side that he thinks they should all register. Captain America's on the side that they don't. So that's the way it happens in the comics. And one of the complaints I heard about Civil War, the comic story, was that it really was almost good guys versus bad guys. So it was kind of clear which side they thought was in the right and which side wasn't. Whereas the new Civil War, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, the next Civil War, Civil War II, that's just starting in the Marvel Universe right now, is much more of a gray area. Well, there isn't necessarily a right or a wrong. So it'll be interesting to see. I know the movie's going to play out a little bit differently. Clearly, they're not going to introduce the New Warriors and all that stuff. They don't really need to. They can go back and just touch on devastation that's happened in the previous Marvel movies. So, important distinctions, but I still think at the end you're going to have the same kind of story. You're going to have basically the same ideologies clashing. One that thinks freedom is more important and one that doesn't. And you really can see in Winter Soldier, I mean, and you know, you said you just watched it again recently, Jaden, too, so you should, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be fresh in your mind. There's even this argument that already kind of starts in Winter Soldier, when Captain America and Black Widow and Falcon find out that Nick Fury is still alive, and Nick Fury wants to, you know, kick Hydra out of S.H.I.E.L.D. but still have the Insight program and have it do what originally was designed. And you could tell, like, early on when Captain America even discovers the Insight program exists, he disagrees with it, even in the form that Nick Fury expected it to take.
Yeah.
You know, because doesn't he say something like, well, it's not freedom if they're doing the right thing because someone's holding a gun to their head kind of thing. And so it's the same kind of... It's the same kind of idea, you know? If you're doing the right thing because somebody's watching you and making sure you do the right thing, is that really you doing the right thing? Are you making the right choices? You know? Not really. And so...
Exactly.
Like when I was watching Winter Soldier, so it reminded me, there's been a few times in the comics, two times specifically, where Steve Rogers has given up the mantle of Captain America because he felt it, because of his beliefs, because of his ideals, he couldn't keep wearing the costume. The first time was way back in Captain America 180, I believe. So what happened then, he becomes kind of disillusioned with the government because he discovers, and this kind of parallels what happened in the Winter Soldier with S.H.I.E.L.D. So he finds out that there's a bunch of high-ranking government officials, even to the point of being heavily hinted that the president at that time, who's Richard Nixon, they're part of a terrorist organization known as the Secret Empire, a terrorist organization that exists in the Marvel Universe. And so... he gives up being Captain America because he feels he can't continue to serve America when he finds out that the leaders of America were so corrupt. But he takes the name Nomad, which, you know, man without a country, but he only has that identity for about four issues or so, and issue 184, he returns to the role of Captain America after he kind of realizes that he can be Captain America and support the ideals and represent the values of America, and that doesn't necessarily mean that he supports the government. Because, you know, understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's able to be the symbol of what America should be rather than just like an agent of the government, you know, kind of like when you know Superman fights for truth, justice, the American way, but doesn't mean that, you know, the U.S. gets to tell him what to do.
Yeah, I definitely get that.
Now, the second time lasted much longer and is kind of even more so kind of a reflection of what we see in the Winter Soldier, and what I expect to see as far as why Captain America feels like he needs to not be on the side of the Registration Act. So in Captain America 332, he has a decision to make. He had just found out that technically he had never been discharged from the army. And this was found out like a few issues before 330. May have even been quite a while before. I don't remember the exact issue number, but I do remember it happening where he gets this huge check from the U.S. government. It's basically for back pay because he's been in the army all this time. And so he takes the check and he establishes this hotline where basically people can call in. They need Captain America's help, or they see crimes, or whatever. And before this, he'd been based in New York, and he decides, you know, he's Captain America. He needs to be out there patrolling America. And he got Tony Stark to build him this van that could, like, the paint could change colors. And he put his motorcycle in the back, and he was like traveling around, and he's fighting all kinds of different people. That was a really cool storyline. But what happens as it goes along is that this secret commission of high-ranking officials, and every time they were shown in the comic, they were kind of backlit, and they were just these silhouettes. they tell him, well, you know, you never got discharged from the army, and so technically you're still a soldier, and you need to work for us and do what we say, or you need to give up being Captain America, because, you know, he became Captain America because the government, you know, in World War II, the U.S. government made him Captain America. They gave him the costume, they gave him the shield. And so they say, tell him that he's got to make a choice. And so there's a famous speech in 332. He gives up being Captain America. He basically says that, yes, Captain America was created to be a soldier, but I've made Captain America far more than that. And to go back to being a soldier would be a betrayal of everything he's done his whole career as Captain America. And he says to serve the country the way the commission would want him to, he'd have to give up his personal freedom. And that's basically giving up, like, one of the greatest ideals that he has. And he would have to compromise those ideals to obey those orders. And that he can't represent the American government, which is what he realized way back when he stopped being Nomad. He doesn't represent the American government. He says the president represents the American government. He's got to represent the American people. And the American people's dream is to be free and to dream of being all you can be, and that being Captain America was his American dream, but he's not going to compromise that by becoming a soldier. And so he gives it up. He gives up the shield, he gives up the costume, he gives up the name Captain America, and they end up choosing somebody else to become Captain America, and he wears a black costume that kind of looks like Captain America's costume, in as much as has the same kind of boots and gloves, and he gets an adamantium shield from Tony Stark, and he goes by the name of the Captain, and that's the status quo for quite a while. I'm not exactly sure how long it goes, but it's at least a year before he returns to being Captain America. So there is precedent for Captain America to go against what the government wants. You know, there's three times he's done it in the comics, three big specific storylines: the Nomad storyline, the Captain America No More storyline, and then of course the actual Civil War storyline that came out in 2005. So it's no surprise, and I feel like, as I said, the roots of the Marvel Cinematic Universe of Steve Rogers, Tony Stark, not just blindly following along with what the government wants and what S.H.I.E.L.D. wants, the precedents, the roots were there. You know, the seeds were planted in Winter Soldier when you see how uncomfortable he is with the whole Operation Insight thing, and you know, and it's great. It's really great to see. I feel like Captain America has never been my favorite Marvel character in the comics. I always liked Iron Man a lot more. And don't get me wrong, you know, I've gone on record as saying plenty of times that I didn't think Robert Downey Jr. would be a good Tony Stark, and I was wrong, and I ate my words. But in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I'm not a huge Chris Evans fan either, but they have done such a great job of capturing the essence of who Captain America is, maybe better than any other superhero in any other superhero movie. I mean, Batman, they've kind of been able to do it here or there, but maybe because so many different people have been Batman and different directors have kind of interpreted him in kind of slightly different ways, the consistency is not there. And being that Chris Evans, Captain America, Kevin Feige overseeing it all, making sure that it's consistent, he has been consistent the whole time. And I think, granted, I haven't seen all the Marvel movies, but I think he's my favorite character, which is very interesting to me because, much like Manny's always saying, he finds Superman kind of boring because he's so goody-goody. That's kind of how I feel about Captain America at times. But Chris Evans, all credit to him. He does a good job of making Cap feel very, very human and kind of vulnerable with the whole man out of time thing. So, Yeah, he's a great character. Like I said, probably.
I think Chris Evans does a great job playing him. I never really thought of Chris Evans before I saw him playing Captain America really being like a great pick for Captain America, but I think he's pretty good at it. Plus, it's not easy to pull off a like being a superhuman, like a super soldier, as a regular human being.
Yeah, well, the reason I had reservations when I heard he was going to play Captain America is because he had played the Human Torch.
Yeah.
And, you know, he played him well, too. You know, he was kind of cocky and full of himself and loved the girls or whatever and was kind of immature. And I was just like, man, now I'm supposed to buy this guy's Captain America. But, yeah, he did a great job. And you know, not just him, but credit the writers as well. Because I think for me, when I realized that he was a great choice was the scene in First Avengers, or Captain America the First Avenger, where he goes to try to apply for the army for the last time, and Stanley Tucci walks in, Dr. Abraham Erskine, mm-hmm. and you know, he asks him that question, do you want to go and kill Nazis? And he's like, you never answered my question, you know, why do you want to go fight Nazis, or why do you want to go kill Nazis? And he has that line that's just so perfectly Captain America. He says, I don't like bullies. I don't care where they're from. And like right there, you got, okay, great choice, like extremely well-written line. You know, they captured the essence of Captain America perfectly right there, the essence of who Steve Rogers is, like right there. And they've kept that, as I said, with consistency throughout all the Marvel movies I've seen anyway. Like I said, I haven't seen Avengers, I haven't seen Age of Ultron, but certainly in the two Captain America movies, very well done. Very well done. So, until we actually go and see Captain America Civil War, then it might be a little easier to say what else we think that you might need to know, but maybe one other thing I can think of is that in the Civil War comic series, Spider-Man starts out on Iron Man's side, but that's not necessarily where he ends up. And there's various reasons for that. I don't know. I mean, have you read the whole Civil War series?
No, I haven't actually.
It would be interesting. I wonder if Manny's read it. I'd be interested to see whether I think it should be read before you go see the movie or not, because it may give away some things. But then again, you know, it's not the exact same story either. So, I mean, it's. I would say if you're really excited to go see Captain America Civil War, go see Captain America Civil War first. But certainly read Marvel's the Civil War. You know, get the trade paperback or whatever, because it's a good story. It's worth reading. And then it'd be easier to compare and contrast, and it, you know, you may not necessarily see everything coming because things are going to be substantially different. So anyway, on to our last bit of movie news, Justice League versus Teen Titans. What was your overall impression of it?
Well, considering it's so Damian Wayne focused, I actually really liked it. I think my favorite part was the fact that Starfire was the leader of the Teen Titans, and she was older, not really a teen herself. And it took a lot of the... I really liked when they brought Cyborg and he was fighting with them, kind of like the throwback to the TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Was an original founding member. Yeah, I thought that the dynamic was interesting as well with Dick Grayson, one of the original Titans, and then Starfire, one of the original Marv Wolfman, George Perez Titans when they relaunched the series in the early 80s. And then, you know, the three younger, and then plus Damian. So, yeah, it was pretty interesting. But, yeah, I mean, I dislike Damian as well, always have. But they did a good job with his characterization in this. He did become a little more palatable as it went along. Probably the thing I liked least about the movie, though, was Wonder Woman. I couldn't stand... I don't think they made a good choice for her voice actress, which is Rosario Dawson. I'm kind of indifferent about Rosario Dawson. I don't like her, I don't dislike her, whatever, but I just thought she was a poor choice. And I thought, like, her, from her costume to the way she, especially the way she wore her hair, her headband, it was all terrible. It was terrible. I did not like the way she looked at all. Just hated it. Every time it was on screen, it was jarring to me, and I didn't like it. Didn't like it at all. I thought Batman was well done. I thought Superman was well done. But even though this was Justice League versus Teen Titans, this was a Titans movie. As far as the story goes, you know, it was okay. It wasn't, you know, the greatest or most compelling. But, it, you know, it was enjoyable. And yeah, I think if you're a fan of the Titans, this is a must-see. If you're a huge Justice League person and you don't really feel like seeing it, it's probably something you could skip. It is a very heavily focused on the Titans, and well done. I mean, I enjoyed Beast Boy, which they kept calling him Garfield, right?
Yeah.
But in the comics, his name is Garth, isn't it?
I'm not sure, actually. I haven't read any Teen Titans comics recently that had Beast Boy in them.
I mean, I know that the pre-New 52 Changeling was Garth. Let me look it up real fast. Well, actually, it says Garfield Mark Logan, or Gar. And that's according to Wikipedia. No, I guess I'm wrong. I guess it was always Garfield. Man, I could have sworn, though, that at some point, as Beast Boy, originally appeared in 1965 as Changeling. Maybe that's what I need to do. Maybe I need to look it up as because that's when he was in the Marv Wolfman, George Perez Teen Titans, his name was Changeling. Which didn't necessarily know why they changed it. Maybe they just always called him Gar, and I assumed it was Garth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always been Garfield. Man, I could have sworn it was Garth. Oh, well, that's my bad. But yeah, I thought he was well done. Really, I've never enjoyed Blue Beetle, the Jaime Reyes version of Blue Beetle, more than I did in this cartoon. So I thought he was well done. I did like the dynamic of Starfire being a little older, like you said. And I'm curious to see if this is kind of the flavor they're going to go after when they do the Teen Titans Rebirth title. Because we know there's two. There's going to be the Titans, which are probably the Titans that are currently starring in Titans Hunt title. And there's going to be the Teen Titans, which we know Damian Wayne's going to try to lead them. So I don't know that Starfire will be in that book. I don't know. We're not sure, and we know Kid Flash is going to be in that as well. Maybe the new Superboy. So it'll be interesting, because I thought the dynamic was done well. Never been a huge Raven fan, but I thought she was fine in this. So yeah, I thought it was done well. This was a very anime-style animation, I felt. Especially in terms of like background and stuff. Did you notice that at all?
I could see that. It felt very reminiscent of the old Cartoon Network TV show to me. There was a lot of nods to that TV show, I felt, throughout. The Raven reminded me a lot of the Raven in that show.
But that was more of a cartoony style. That was more of a cartoony style.
Well, that was anime style. That was straight, like, I think it was translated to English, actually.
Okay, so I'm, like, specifically thinking of the scene early on when Nightwing is driving Damian to Titan's Tower.
Yeah, and the, like, when they're going over the horizon and it splits.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, like, that's straight out of, like, Battle of the Planets from, like, the early 80s, like, and that to me didn't seem like the animation style of the you're talking about the Titans Go cartoon?
No, the Teen Titans Go.
Oh, you know, I don't think I ever watched any of that.
Yeah, I don't know if you would enjoy it. It's really, very, very, anime style, very out there. Characters are very different than they are in the comics. They have the same character. They're pretty much the same characters that are in the Teen Titans Go cartoon, but in a regular 3D cartoon or anime style 3D cartoon.
Do you know who played Trigon in this?
No, I'm not sure.
It's the Punisher, John Bernthal.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. We're going to talk about him getting his own Netflix series, and we're also going to be talking about him. So much digitization to his voice, you know, digitally modified and stuff. There's no way you could recognize it. I thought that was interesting. But I thought overall the voice acting was done pretty well. I did miss Green Lantern. Would have been nice to have Green Lantern in this. I feel like classic Justice League should have had Green Lantern. Probably Aquaman too. You know, because it's the big seven. But instead we had Superman, we had Wonder Woman, we had Batman, we had Cyborg, and we had Flash. So, would have been nice. I mean, as long as you have those five, why not just throw in the other two? So, yeah, overall, I thought it was pretty good. I'd probably give it like a B. Or on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe like a 7.5. So
it's on par with the rest of DC's animated movies. I mean, they were good. I enjoy every single one of them, but they're nothing like jaw-dropping or anything.
Yeah.
They're consistently good, though.
I feel like there have been better ones. And there certainly have been worse ones, so...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad I saw it. It's probably not one that I'll watch again. At least not for a long time. I mean, I'm not that big of a huge Teen Titans fan. And again, a little too much Damian for me. Although, like I said, he did get a little more tolerable as it went on.
Yeah, it's been kind of crappy, honestly. The past few animated movies that they did for... on DC have been Damian focused. I mean, they had this one, they had Batman Bad Blood, and I think the one before that was very Damian focused as well.
Wasn't the one before that the Suicide Squad one?
It might have been the previous Batman one before Bad Blood was also very Damian focused, because that's when he pretty much moves in with Bruce.
Yeah, Son of Batman or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I just don't like the character. I just really, really don't. So. But yeah, I thought the Suicide Squad one is better than this one, I feel.
I don't know, I could give or take the Suicide Squad one. I like the original, the regular Justice League one.
Yeah.
They came out with a couple years ago, that one is really good. I like the Flashpoint Paradox one, but I don't really care for the animation in that.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. The Flashpoint one's good, but yeah, the animation style is a little, I don't know, weird. But yeah, story-wise, I enjoyed it better than this one. The All-Star Superman one is really good.
I think that one's old. I don't know if I've seen that one.
Yeah, that one's a few years old. So, do you have any plans for Free Comic Book Day, or are you going to be stuck working?
No, I think I'm going to be stuck working.
Ah, that's too bad.
So I usually have overtime on weekends.
Oh, that's cool. As far as my plans, go down to my local LCS. Well, I guess I should say go down to my LCS. That's LCS stands for Local Comic Book Shop. Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona. They always put on a huge Free Comic Book Day event. Artists and vendors out there and all kinds of cool stuff. So planning on that. It's supposed to be a lot cooler this year than it was last year. Last year was pretty warm, so looking forward to some cooler weather. I'll probably hit up some other shops. Last year I went to Jesse James Comics, also in Glendale, Arizona, for their midnight release. This year I'm hoping to be off work in time. Last year I wasn't working at the time, so it made it real easy. So I'm hoping to be off in time to be able to go hit that up. And then there's, you know, I'm lucky enough to live in a place, now that I live in Phoenix, where there's a lot of shops. So Samurai Comics... they have several locations in the Phoenix area where they have big events for their Free Comic Book Day with artists doing sketches and stuff like that. So I took the day off work and I plan on hitting up quite a few shops. And then, of course, coming up at the beginning of June, it's the big Phoenix Comic Con. If you're planning on attending, I hope you got your badges already purchased, because the price just went up as of today, which is May 1st. It's a great show. A lot to see and do. I definitely recommend it if you live anywhere close. It's very much a comic and celebrity-based show. So those are the two big focuses. You can go to phoenixcomiccon.com for more details. And then the next show will be attending after that. And I know you'll be there, Jaden, regardless of work, is San Diego Comic-Con, of course. Coming up, what is it, June 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, and 25th, I believe. No, not June, sorry, July. That's July.
Yeah, I was about to say. I was like, I don't remember being in June this year.
Yeah, July. So, really, really looking forward to that. So, I guess that's going to wrap it up. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Remember, if you don't follow us on social media, you can really help us out by showing us your support there. So follow us on Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. We're also on the Twitter, thetwitter.com / The Comic Source. Great place to follow us. I tweet daily. I'm retweeting, having conversations with comic creators. It's an easy way to find out when we release a new episode. You can find those episodes on iTunes, and if you are downloading us from iTunes, please leave us 5-star reviews. It greatly increases our ability to be out there and be found by people looking for comic podcasts, so it really helps grow our listenership. We really appreciate that. You can also go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com, find all previous episodes of our YouTube channel, all episodes of our podcast, previous episodes, Sketch Gallery, Manny's Written Blog. Just there's all kinds of great stuff there. And there's also the Contact Us link if you want to reach out. Let us know if there's something you want to hear us talk about, something you want to hear us review, something you want to recommend or complain about. We love hearing from the listeners. So if you'd like to email us directly, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening. As I said, we greatly appreciate the support. The Comic Source has been growing, and that helps us be able to attend more conventions, have more access to publishers and exclusive content and things like that. So we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again, everybody. And we have a lot of exciting things coming up, more interviews. You know, these shows we're attending, I always try to get as many creator interviews as I can, because I know all you listeners out there really enjoy hearing from your favorite comic creators. We're going to be in the near future, hopefully having some guests on the show, some big names, dropping in to talk to us about, what they're working on, what their upcoming projects are. So we look forward to that, and not just comic creators, but, maybe some other sci-fi pop culture figures as well. A lot of things in the works, coming down the line. So, make sure you follow us on Twitter and, all the social media sites, so you'll know what exactly is coming up for The Comic Source. So thanks again, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.